So, welcome to all of you. Pranam. Good morning from North Carolina. And thank you so much for your presence. It's my pleasure to meet all of you again. And as you know, we were thinking about sharing. Some devotees also invited me to invite you to share some words regarding how Padmanabha Swami is doing, basically, what's about his life and how he is navigating this particular chapter of his existence, and hopefully some of that will may provide some clarity on how any one of us can navigate this particular chapter, which is a particular chapter in itself, quite particular. But it's a chapter, so of the whole book, so we cannot just dismiss one chapter of the book because we don't like it or because it's too bewildering, as some other sampradayas did consider the Brahma Vimohan Lila to be an interpolation in the Bhagavatam, because it's too bewildering for them to accept that someone like Brahma can be bewildered or something. So when something is too bewildering, sometimes we tend to not wanting to include and to integrate that in the book of our lives. We would like life to be not so bewildering. And very, very interestingly, as you may know, very recently I've been lecturing on the Brahma Vimohan Lila for a few months. So the Vimohan Lila somehow continues the bewilderment chapter, but it's part of the book of life. So it's important to acknowledge that. And it's not only a part, as we know, Brahma Vimohan Lila is a crucial part of the Bhagavatam. So it's not only a part of the Bhagavatam, it was one of the most important ones. So in the same way, some chapter of our lives is considerably bewildering, doesn't mean that has to be discarded as useless or as soon as possible, but actually embraced as probably one of the most important chapters of our book. So today I wanted basically to share some words in connection to that, how to navigate, if you will, bewilderment, how to deal with uncertainty, how to fall in love, if you want to put it like that, with paradox and with situations that are unknown to us, that represent something quite uncomfortable, if you want to put it like that, and how all those things are necessary. Not only okay, they are there, we have to deal with them, but are very important. So basically that's the intention today. As you know, I've written some letter last week called The Shape of Distance, and somehow still that's taking shape, a particular distance from certain dynamics and a particular proximity to another dynamics, because distance and proximity occur simultaneously. As looking in one direction makes you not look in another direction, being aware of something probably implies being unaware of something else. So sometimes some distances can create another form of closeness and proximity. So I'm trying basically to discern about what's that new proximity, that new closeness that this chapter is inviting me to, how Krishna is trying to appear in my life in a new form, inviting me for a deeper and more intimate connection. And sometimes that can be bewildering in itself, because as we were speaking some days ago, in some stages of your life you feel that Krishna is quite close to you, and you are, how to say, getting acquainted with that proximity. And Krishna, who Krishna is, and how he's relating to you, and so on. But in some other stages, it seems that he disappeared, or that he is no longer there. But actually, he's just taking a new form, taking a new shape in your life, probably getting closer to your heart. But since it's a new way, it's a new form, we may not be acquainted with that. That feels like he disappeared. Well, actually, he's getting closer. So I think these type of ideas are very important to bear in mind, especially in situations like this, at least for me, where in one sense it may seem that certain things or situations or aspects of Krishna's life disappeared or are no longer there. One is devoid of those. But actually, I don't feel like that, actually. I feel like it's just taking a new shape, taking a new form and inviting me to a new, an upgraded level of relationship. And of course, there is a transition in that where we will feel, again, bewildered, not knowing what's going on. But at the same time, it's important to keep in mind what's actually going on, taking place beyond our uncertainty, if you will. So again, I will share some words, hopefully that may give some panorama of my inner landscape. And if that's something of that will help you, okay, I'm happy with that. Of course, it's not my intention to speak here to tell you what to do, what to think, or to follow whatever I'm doing or saying. It's just much less to gossip or to criticize anyone. It's not the idea here to to point to some imagined enemy outside of our own selves. As we know, we are the only ones who can be our own worst enemy, as Krishna says in the Gita. The mind can be best friend, worst enemy. So in situations like this, we are all put to test to see where we are standing, how we react, how we feel, how we think, how we process all this with Krishna in the center, with the bigger picture in mind. So I'm not saying I'm doing it perfectly and I'm giving the perfect ideal example and you are here to learn from me. I'm not trying to convey that notion. I'm just sharing on the level of equals, as peers, some of whatever experiences and thoughts are helping me to navigate this particular section of the journey. And especially to make emphasis on how important it is for us to, in situations like this, which again, it's not only, again, I'm not referring to a particular situation, although you may relate that to that, but it goes beyond any particular situation. It has to do with situations where we are put outside of our comfort zone and we are expected to have a particular response to that. How to take responsibility as individuals. We have to take a stance to decide how we choose to, again, to walk, to thread that particular path. And at the same time, all that hopefully in the context of developing ourselves as individuals in the context of bhakti. This is something that also I like to emphasize a lot to myself. You know? Like, we are personalists. We belong to a monotheistic personalist path. So to be a personalist does not only mean to believe in a personal God, but to be individuals ourselves and to be all that we can be as individuals and to properly respect our individuality, to properly honor who we are in Krishna, all that we can be in his shelter, not like a way of pratishta or like looking respect for ourselves, but to honor who we are because Krishna considers that we were worthy of existing and there is a potential, loving potential in connection to him. So all that has to be honored and respected. It has nothing to do with false ego. False ego is to seek honor and respect without considering who we are in connection to Bhagavan. But if you acknowledge that, that takes a whole another shape. And I think that's a very important aspect of being a personalist in our tradition, like trying to honor our individuality, and that takes the shape of trying to be serious and responsible with our own choices and remaining an individual despite all situations. So I will be mostly speaking at the end. Let's see if we have place for some questions. Although, if there are questions, the idea is that the question will be related to what I am speaking in these broader terms of the situation. And of course, if someone may have specific questions or specific situations, I think we can better speak privately. We can organize that. You can tell me and we can continue talking as I already have announced that in the talk I gave last week. So, as you may imagine, I've received many messages this last week, literally hundreds and hundreds. I don't know, maybe thousands, at least hundreds and hundreds for sure. I received many friendly requests in Facebook. I don't know if that's the the algorithm or whatever, because many people who I do not even know. But whatever the case, my point is that many of these people who wrote to me, one of the main questions was like, okay, Maharaj, so what you will do now? How you plan to to move forward in your life after certain situations that have happened, as you may know. So that was basically one of the main questions. Of course, many questions, but that was one of the main. And that's an interesting question, of course. And to be honest with you, it's, of course, if you can imagine, it's not clear for me how to move forward in one sense. In the sense of, it's not that I have a clear picture of what will be my future from here to a few months. But at the same time, how to say, I think that in this particular stage I am in, at least, and probably some of you in your own specific experiences, I think the most important thing here is to have faith that there is a moving forward. Even if you don't have it very clear, what's the way to move forward? What's the specific shape the moving forward will take? To have deep conviction, to develop, to go deeply into this sense of there is a moving forward. To have this unconditional trust, there is. No, there's hope in that sense. There is a moving forward, although I don't have a clue what that is. But there is. And again, increase my unconditional faith. And Krishna is orchestrating every single chapter in his devotee's life. It's not that he left one's heart, that he's totally indifferent or whatever. So these are basic topics, as you may have heard them hundreds of times. But of course, in situations like this, it's the time to walk the talk and to really believe in them, if you will. In other words, we can speak about these things for years, for lifetimes. But we have to play out our beliefs. No? I mean, we can say, I believe this, I believe that. But you will show how much you believe in those things according to how much we play out our beliefs accordingly whenever that's required. So I think this is a great opportunity for that to happen, for us to embrace our beliefs and our ideals and express them, live them, become our ideal through our own example, by showing, okay, in conditional faith in Bhagavan's presence in my life, in his loving gaze, in his mercy, his orchestrating, and in that there is an unconditional meaning and purpose and moving forward. And understanding that by by having that trust, in the present moment, despite so many things that yet remain to be shown, the rest will unfold organically, accordingly. So I think that's an important thing, because many times, as you may imagine, and I think that's one, and we will speak about that, that's one of the main causes of anxiety, is that the situation is totally out of our control. Something happens that is totally unexpected, goes way beyond our control, and we are totally put into anxiety because we are kicked out very far from our comfort zone. So then we realize how much we are depending on our sense of having control of things, although we don't have control, but we like to feel we have control. So a situation like this is showing us how much we can have control and in which direction. We can have some control, but the control we can have is choosing which attitude I have in relation to those things I cannot control. And trusting that beyond all that, behind the curtains, there is a a well-wisher in the form of Bhagavan. So for me, that's the moving forward at this point. Not so much like how everything will be solved and trying to run into the future and avoid the present, or trying to travel into the past and become whatever, nostalgic or depressed or whatever, and trying to change things from the past or trying to control the future, but trying to embrace the present, where the only place where Bhagavan lives eternally. So for me, that's a moving forward, basically, at this point. That's how I'm feeling. Moving forward is not so much running and leaving this situation as soon as possible, but going through all that I need to go through as long as it takes, instead of as soon as possible. And so not just trying to obtain relief from pain, from uncertainty, which comes, of course. I mean, just for you to know, it's not that there is no pain, no uncertainty, and no so many of those things. But generally in our mechanism, in our system, if you will, we have this inbuilt instinct that whenever pain comes, we try to avoid it. So sometimes we try to escape from those situations, or we just try to move forward in the sense of leaving them as soon as possible. But sometimes, or most times, instead of running from them, is try to remain there and try to hear the lesson, try to learn some, try to hold the tension, not just run from it. Try to accept the circumstances and try to, I mean, again, I'm not saying try to you, I'm trying to say that to me, but I'm just saying how, whatever it seems I'm telling to you, is how I'm trying to preach to myself, if you will. So try to learn to see and hear from the circumstances. And of course, changing whatever I need to change. But I think it all begins with some foundational acceptance of things. You know? Because things happen. Life happens, as they say. So we cannot deny, we cannot reject. We have to begin with accept them. Be willing to acknowledge reality, basically. Knocking on our door. Begin with a yes, as we were speaking this day, instead of a no. To have an initial foundational yes, acceptance of what's coming, and acceptance that what's coming includes a bigger picture, which is always beneficial for all of us, and not begin the whole thing with a no. Interestingly, yesterday was the celebration of Srila Bhaktirakshasinar Dev Goswami's Avirbhav Mahotsav, appearance day. And he used to say, among many beautiful things he will describe the Om, the Pranava, Omkar, Om, as a yes. This yes, which means he will put it from the side of yes. Whatever you are looking for in your life, it's there. It's possible. But also we can say the yes that this Om represents, that the Absolute Truth represents, is, again, a yes of acceptance, whatever is coming to us. Not only whatever we are looking for is there, but whatever is looking for us, if you will, in the form of the circumstances, Krishna coming as what happens in our life, opening the door for that. Because we cannot start seeing or understanding anything if we start with no. If we start with denial or rejection, we have to start with a yes of basic acceptance, of trust in the unconditional meaning and purpose of whatever is coming to us. And also an initial yes of acceptance has to do with not too quickly labeling people or circumstances, not too quickly analyzing, categorizing things in or out, good and bad, like very quickly putting everything in its place, so everything is in order, if you will. And I'm back in my comfort zone. That's not necessarily a yes of accepting what's coming. Again, sometimes what's coming is uncertain, it's bewildering, and it's important to allow ourselves to go through that and not be anxious about figuring everything out as soon as possible. We have to leave the field open, if you will. We have to have the humility of coexisting with the unknown, if you will, of remaining in a situation where not everything is clear, and it's okay. I'm sorry if I'm making you very nervous with all this uncomfortable discourse, but that's how life it is. So, and that's what I've tried to engage with during this whole month and this particular chapter, and hopefully in the future, and hopefully before that as well. And I, of course, I feel this is something I need to learn even more, because there's no limit how much we can go deep into these teachings. So it's important to keep this foundational yes, this foundational acceptance. Krishna is an ocean of mercy. So Krishna is not concentrated on our faults and just judging us for that, but actually he's looking at the places in us. Let's put it like that. Krishna is looking at the places in us that are trying to say yes. No. He will take a note in that direction. So it's important that we, again, leave the field open and try to remain open to this foundational yes. Of course, with this I'm not saying yes in a naive way that will allow you to be manipulated or abused or something like this. No? Or try you to manipulate other people by telling them, just say yes to everything. It doesn't mean that. I'm meaning, again, a foundational yes of accepting reality as it is. As we have Bhagavad Gita as it is, we have to have reality as it is. And once you have learned to say that foundational yes, later, after that, different no's can be invoked, of course. Sometimes we need to say no. We need to establish some boundaries, if you will, of proper limits and protection and respect and criterion in life. So different no's will be helpful and even necessary. But a yes has to be there to begin with. That's my point. You have the foundational yes to begin with, and then different no's will fall into place. Because without the no, you have no protected boundaries. You have no identity. Basically, you lose yourself into a sea of only yes. So you have to need, of course, to protect yourself with a necessary no. And that no that comes after the yes, that no will be as sacred as the original yes. So here we are not just praising the yes, the original acceptance, but whatever comes after that in that context. So in other words, we should remain open to whatever situation comes to our life. That's the yes. And then learn from it. But again, that doesn't mean that we will accept everything and anything as true or favorable. But there is place for a no. So in this yes, or in this process of accepting what's coming to our lives, and even how we are reacting to what's coming to our life, sometimes that won't be the most flattering, if you will, moment. That may be quite humiliating, basically, how we will feel, how we will react. Accepting our own reality sometimes may not feel very spiritual, basically. May feel embarrassing. But that's part of reality, and that's part of spiritual growth. Although it doesn't seem too spiritual, because we may have some idealized form of what's spiritual, actually it may be one of the most important spiritual moments in our journey. Because dealing with, again, whatever is coming, especially if it's a messy, as I remember Archana Siddhi loves to speak about the beauty and messiness in the journey of a sadhaka. So I really appreciate that notion, because there is beauty in the messiness. Although generally for us, beauty is one thing, messiness is another, and the two of them shall never meet. But actually, they shall meet. They need to meet. They are to one point synonyms. We need to find beauty in the messiness. So, but when we deal with our own messiness, yeah, I know it's difficult to see beauty there. Because, and it's difficult to see, okay, this has to do with spiritual journey. It doesn't feel like the essence. It feels like I am on the edge of the whole thing and not with and the essence. And sometimes in that situation, many people may run to more esoteric postures, or instead of bearing what needs to be addressed on a more relative level. So I think it's important. And all of us will have that temptation. Again, I'm not here giving some indirect pointing to someone. All of us are potentially, vulnerable to all that. Especially as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, as I like to say, because we have such a wealth of detailed descriptions of theological unfolding and what have penetration into transcend, all those things that we have that are not almost present in that detail in other tradition, we may really lose ourselves in that and use all those details as excuses, as just to run and hide and absorbing things that actually become an avoidance to our human side or some other issues that need to be addressed, whatever it may be, some type of messiness. So we need to not only try to rush into the essence, if you will, of our lives, but also into the edges of our lives. And by fully experiencing those edges, by fully going through the proper experience of suffering or integration, whatever needs to happen in that context, that will lead us back to the center and to the essence, you know, in an upgraded version. That's how it happens. No, it's not that it's just go to the essence and that's all. That's part of the essence. And again, all this we will be taking, we like it or not, by force. Life will throw us in those directions. No, it's not that I was praying for a situation like this in my life. You can imagine these are the things that, the last things you could even imagine will happen in your life. But they are happening. And for some reason, and of course, I try to pray and remain open for whatever mistakes I may have done or I may be doing or I may continue to be doing. That's the initial yes, but also there is a no in which you are also willing to accept things in a realistic way and not just allow yourself to be defined by whatever public opinion may tell, especially in a situation like this. Sometimes it goes public and of course everyone has something to say, but you have to have some integrity about, okay, who you are basically. But life comes, God comes, we could say Krishna comes to us. I think there is some saying like God comes to you disguised as your life. No, so whatever is your life, it's nice to see that as Krishna coming disguised, if you will, in this particular situation. How much we like to deal with that, how much we like Krishna. if the particular circumstance is Krishna, God himself coming to your life, and we are denying that, rejecting that, well, we are ultimately doing that to Bhagavan. So it's important to keep this fundamental yes to begin with, of acceptance, trying to, if we cannot see Krishna's plan in detail, at least to accept there is a plan, accept Krishna's merciful nature and trust how everything will unfold accordingly, if we do our part, again. Because if we are not doing our part, we won't catch the universal way, what Srila Siddhar Maharaj will say. So again, a proper yes in place, foundational, proper no's in that context, to remain as a healthy individual, acceptance of getting acquainted of what's going on beyond the comfort zone, which again, it's such a dark space that most of us do not like to be in. I mean, it's not that I have such a taste to remain out of my comfort zone. No, that's really painful. That's really bewildering, but that's really necessary at the same time. I'm sure I'm not the only one having a taste of what does it feel to be outside of the comfort zone. And in my particular case, as you may know, I've already been through similar situations, similar dynamics in the past. So somehow you become, become accustomed to these situations in the sense that you become indifferent and you just reply automatically, but somehow there is some experience in between that helps you, hopefully, to deal with them to in a more realistic and accepting, okay, this part of life, part one, part two, part of life, many parts. And I understand that for some of you, probably, this may be a very first time of experiencing this particular place outside of the comfort zone. In my case, it may be not the first one, so I understand that some of you may be even more affected than me in one sense. Not to compare, everyone is in their own journey and it's not worse, better. Each one is whatever they have to be and going through whatever you have to go through. So again, I know that we feel it's uncomfortable to be in this situation. And not again, I'm not pointing to this situation, to a situation. I'm just speaking about a situation that feels uncomfortable. You apply this criterion to whatever situation have passed and will happen again, on some level or another. So, yeah, if we feel uncomfortable, I think the question is, what's the actual discomfort? And why is whenever we think we have recognized what's the discomfort, why that thing, whatever that may be, what that makes myself uncomfortable? We need to ask those questions to ourselves. I won't reply them for you, but we need to ask whatever situation that is, what's the actual thing that is making me uncomfortable and why? Why do I choose to feel like that? I mean, I don't want to say I choose. I don't want to feel that I'm putting too much responsibility on you. But again, we have a responsibility to choose how we respond to different situations. And of course, situations like these or others basically had to do, as we say before, with total loss of control. Total, practically. So it's very... I mean, we are basically naked. We are totally vulnerable. When we actually are shown how little we are in control to begin with, and again, it doesn't feel glorious for most of us, but actually it's who we are. So it's important that we accept who we are. We are not in control of almost anything. But also those moments when we see that, we realize how much all the things we are not in control of. But also we can glimpse at what's the thing I can control. Again, what's the choice I can make in the context of realizing how little I'm in control. So it's a very, it's a potential for lots of enlightening there. All the things that are totally beyond my control, okay, I accept them, I recognize them. And in the context of that, what I can control, what I can decide. I am an individual in which direction I can become responsible, which are the choices I can make. But again, for us to reach that place of forced enlightenment, if you will, of vulnerability and remaining naked in front of a total unpredictable situation, we need some situations, again, like that, so we can somehow be forced to choose that. If we are not sometimes pushed a little bit by Krishna in that direction, generally by ourselves, we tend to remain in the comfort zone, like it or not. So we need sometimes total loss of control. We need unpredictable change. We need to be out of the comfort zone. Again, I'm not saying this on a level that you die of an overdose of that. Again, Krishna knows how much we can deal with, as I say. Sometimes like to say, and if sometimes the situation feels, this is too much, Krishna is sending an overdose here, I cannot deal with that. Actually, you cannot deal probably with that at the present stage of consciousness you're in, and the very situation is inviting you to upgrade your perception of reality, so you can deal with that. As Srila Semaraj will say, change your angle of vision. And by taking shelter in Bhagavan, in prayer, and receiving the extra grace, vision, mercy, for you to, again, have the capacity to deal with the circumstances. There's a saying, I don't know if you have it in English, but at least in Spanish it's there, that is, oh God, I'm not praying to you for circumstances according to my capacities, but for capacities according to the circumstances. No? So that's a very different stance in prayer, in addressing Bhagavan, in addressing ourselves in any given situation. And of course, you may imagine which is the ideal one. Not so much send me circumstances according to my capacity, which basically mean let me remain in my comfort zone and let the whole world adapt to me. Basically, that's what we call Maya or illusion, to think that that's even possible. But actually, send me capacities, send me empowerment, send me whatever you need to send me so I can deal with whatever is coming. That's what we need to grow, basically. If we don't enter into that area, there is no substantial growth, maturity, and progress on an inner level. And again, we need for that to visit, inhabit for some time the out of the comfort zone place, to deal with the unknown. And sometimes you may have seen these medieval old maps that sometimes there were some warnings outside of the main known areas and there were some dragons drawn there. So be careful. This is out of the comfort zone. This is the unknown. We don't know what's going on. Some monster may be there. So we have to confront those dragons. When we are approaching the edge of our comfort level, it feels even like that. It feels dangerous. It feels scary. It feels dark. It feels uncertain. You don't have a clue where you are going. But you have to have this foundational yes, this foundational trust that Krishna is protecting, Krishna is guiding. There is some purpose to all that. But still it remains, again, it may remain quite paradoxical, uncertain on some level. For me, this situation is kind of, you may have heard about this koan in the Zen Buddhist traditions, this koan, which is like a little, sometimes like a little impossible, like paradoxical riddle that the teacher may give to the student. And you cannot resolve that koan by normal means of logic, by the usual way we think and try to solve things. It doesn't work. If you try to do that, your head collapses. So that koan is intended to throw you out of the comfort zone, of the usual way you tend to deal with things, think about life. And you are putting it outside of the comfort zone where real learning and real experiences can happen, actually. From the comfort zone, you cannot have any real insights. So through this koan, you're basically literally thrown beyond, how to say, your certitudes or your ego securities. No? I know who I am, what is like this, how to deal with that. You are totally put into an uncertain area. You are thrown into, if you will, to put it like to a childlike openness, no? In which you are discovering everything from a new perspective. No? And you can be talked again, basically. No? But again, all that implies leaving, let go of our present comfort zone, if you will. And acknowledging how much attached we may be to that and how much we need to let go of it. So that's on one side. No? Again, and for me, this is pretty much the case now. No? Lots of uncertainty. On one level, lots of uncertainty. On another level, the foundational certainty and faith that, of course, can always be increased. And I'm praying for that. I'm not saying I have the ideal fullest level of that, but fortunately Krishna is complimenting in the situation and sending that deep foundational trust and yes, as we were saying. So that's the option. If you don't want that option, then you have to just try, depending on expectation, basically how you will like things to be, how you will like things to happen, and probably how you will like things to happen basically speaks how little we are willing to be transformed, because we already have figured out how everything should be and happen and end, which is all from our usual way of seeing and thinking about things, all from our comfort zone. So expectations, depending on expectation, will keep. One thing is hope, no? In the bigger picture of Krishna's plan, in the foundational yes, hope. Another thing is expectation, which is more an attachment to think happening as I would like them to happen, especially in a situation which is totally chaotic, at least on some level, it can be perceived as such. So expectation is keeping us from truly transformative experience, from mercy. That's mercy, truly transformative experience. So expectation is just insisting madly, probably, in a particular direction that probably will never happen. So the more you get attached to that, the more you suffer, because it may never happen and you just insist it should happen only in this particular way. And the worst thing you can do is try to apply expectation to a situation that is totally unexpected. No, expectation is the opposite of unexpected situation. So again, we need to get acquainted with this type of ideas. Again, it doesn't have to do with this particular situation. I mean, if it's this not situation, there will be so many situations in this lifetime, in another lifetime. This is just one point we are going through into an eternal line that we can describe our timeline, our eternal existence as jivas. I mean, so many lifetimes, impossible to count, and probably so many after this one as well. So much journey, and this is a specific point of the line, not either making it insignificant as to evade it, but just to not lose sight of the bigger picture. And of course, you have to go through the point to make sense of the line, if you will. So we need, especially I will say as Gaudiya, I feel even all this situation for me is making me think about how much we as a community, as a sampradaya itself, how these type of things need to be further emphasized for sadhakas, how they need to be talked about this language of, sometimes they call the language of descent, not only of ascending, but learning to descend into the darkness, if you will, into the to enter willingly, and trustingly in certain dark periods of life. The word darkness is not bad. That's another thing. it can have a negative connotation, but it's not necessarily a bad word. The word dark. I mean, Krishna is dark, so that doesn't mean he's a bad person or that shouldn't be happening. So dark periods, like a cloudy day, it's not that, oh, it's bad that it's cloudy. No, clouds have a purpose. I mean, it's not that a cloud is unnecessary. Krishna is compared to a cloud as well. So cloudy days or dark periods in our lives are good teachers. They are not to be dismissed so easily. So be careful of entering into that space. So I think that all whatever is maybe happening now or whatever may be happening in the future that may resemble or trigger in us a similar response, is all that is inviting us to grow, for sure. And which is that growth again? How we can learn to coexist with this darkness. How to coexist with darkness. How to coexist with uncertainty, paradox. How to learn to coexist with the unknown, the mystery, things that we don't know what they are. The Bhagavad Gita defines bhakti as Raja Guhya, the greatest of all secrets. Rahasya, the Bhagavatam, mystery. So secret and mystery means I don't know. Or if I know something about that, probably what I know is way less than what I don't know. That's the rule generally. It's not that at some point I know Krishna completely and there's nothing else I can know about him. Generally, whatever you are not aware is way more. So we have to learn to coexist with that. That shouldn't give us anxiety. And I'm not saying it's easy. Again, you know that I always say, I never use the word easy when touching these topics. But I never use the word impossible either. So that's, I think, the art that at least I feel being called to go deeper into in this particular chapter, learning to coexist with uncertainty, darkness, paradox, the unknown, and trust that Krishna is above all of this. He's above all that is out of control. So many things are out of control on one level, Krishna is in control on another level. So to learn to coexist with those things that are out of control, but also to learn to have full faith and trust in the control that is above the out of control. It's part of the process of growing. In this uncertainty, as we spoke some weeks back when we were giving a lecture on prayer, and we were speaking about faith. And we were speaking about doubt that generally is considered as the opposite of faith. But actually we went beyond that level, if you will, of conception, and we mentioned that actually certainty is the opposite of faith. Because certainty means I'm totally sure about something. And that's not faith. That's probably dogmatism, fundamentalism, some superficial belief that you're embracing to make you feel sure. But real, the land of faith implies entering into an unknown land. Things that you don't know, you have to coexist again with paradox, with uncertainty. So uncertainty, or if you want to put it, doubt, doubt and faith are correlative terms, ultimately speaking. So, in other words, if you are going through a situation of uncertainty, that's a very favorable soil for your the growth of your faith. So we only need to to address the situation from the proper angle of vision. In a situation like this or any other, you may feel this is the worst possible thing that can be happening, or you can conclude, oh, this level of uncertainty is really inviting me to increase my faith, because faith and uncertainty are go hand by hand. And we are being tested now, how much you would like to grow your faith, how much you want your faith to be substantial, to grow in the face of obstacles, to be nourished by paradox and uncertainty. If you don't want that, then actually you don't want to grow your faith. You want to keep your faith superficial, which it's kind of an oxymoron to say superficial faith, anyhow. So, darkness. Now, it's important to embrace that. You all may have heard this concept of the dark night of the soul, which sometimes we may think it's something bad or unwilling or something that happens once in a lifetime and after that you are totally enlightened, but that's not the case. It just refers to when you are being led into some darker space from the ones you are accustomed to deal on a daily basis. And in that darkness, there will be a deeper healing and a deeper learning taking place. Even if you don't know, even if you don't realize, because it is darkness, you don't see what's going on, but it's going on. And it needs to be in the dark. It needs to be beyond our awareness, because sometimes if something happens in the context of our awareness, we may run away from it. As embarrassing as that may sound. And to be honest, if we really knew what we are called to relinquish in our spiritual path, our defense mechanisms will never allow us to take that first step, even. Again, that may sound embarrassing, but that's some who we are mostly as conditioned souls. If we are really becoming fully aware of all implications of Krishna's plan, probably we will just escape. And that's why sometimes the only way we can enter into deeper dimensions of our journey is by being unable to see where we are going. Do you follow my point? In other words, the night, and we are speaking about the dark night of the soul, the night is dark, not because it is bad. The darkest night for our protection, because certain things need to take place in the darkness, beyond our awareness. But we should understand there is deep healing and deep learning going on in this dark period. Of course, if we are open and willing to that. So again, we have to be open. Dark night of the soul. There's a very interesting book by a Christian mystic author that I'm about to read called The Cloud of Unknowing. Very interesting also. So we have these ideas, no? Cloud of Unknowing, dark night of the soul. And basically we have a name for Krishna. Krishna is Ghanshyam, which means the dark cloud. So Krishna is cloudy, Krishna is dark. In other words, Krishna is working through darkness. Krishna is approaching us in a cloudy way. I'm saying this because sometimes, again, we idealize how Krishna is, how he should approach me, how things should happen, what does it mean to grow and learn. And we have sometimes a very romantic ideal, too romantic. So it doesn't necessarily happen that way, as we can see. And all this helps us to get to know Krishna more, to get to know how he's dealing with us, relating to us, approaching us, loving us, and so on. So we must learn, I will say personally, and hopefully you agree with me, we must learn to stay with the pain of life. I'm not saying try to avoid that, try to deny that, no. Try to learn to try to learn to suffer, if you will. It's not about stopping suffering, it's about learning to suffer. If you try just to stop suffering, avoid suffering, you will just suffer more and more. That's what happens to most people. If you learn to suffer, that's another thing. So we must learn to coexist with that. Pain of life, if you want to put it like that, the tragic situations, or even to be patient enough that to live in life at some moments without certain conclusions, without certain certainty, if you will. I'm not saying this is an excuse to not be certain about anything and not receive any answer to anything, but sometimes we have to go through days when you don't have an answer, a conclusion, when you don't have even meaning. What's the meaning of all this? So that's again the dark path. You are threading a dark path. Again, dark is not a bad word. It's just darkness. So you are not sure. I'm going north, south. What is going on here? Where what I'm going through? So this is a dark path I'm going through at present. Not again as a bad word. Not as something. I'm requesting you to have pity on me or something like that at all. Just as what it is. And we should be, how to say, happy to acknowledge that. Don't be afraid of darkness. As kids, we will be afraid probably of darkness, because in darkness, we don't know what can take place. Or there's a potential in darkness that scares us, basically. But indeed, as we say, God works in darkness. Krishna likes darkness. He's darkness personified. His very name is darkness. So he lives there. He remains in darkness. So if you want to be with him, we better develop a taste for darkness. And again, darkness means, among other things, where we are not in control. That's darkness. If you enter a dark room, you feel anxious because you are not in control. You lose all point of reference, basically. Nothing is under your control. So situations like these are pretty much throwing to us into a dark room to learn to live, acknowledging how little we can control, but what's the part we should control. And again, it's important to know these things, because that's probably the secret why we tend to avoid those spaces. So again, it's a tough lesson for sure, but it's a beautiful one at the same time. Although it may be probably difficult to accommodate that and to feel like how you can say, Maharaj, that something like a present chapter you may be going through is beautiful. But it is. It is. Although one may lose sight of that for a moment, or one may forget that for a moment, or for more than one moment, we have to, at least again to begin with, have this foundational trust. It is. It is. And again, it's important to stay in this space. Sometimes the word for this space is liminal. Maybe you have heard it for liminality or liminal space, which is come from Latin word limen, which means like, how do you say in English, like threshold. Threshold. Yeah, threshold basically. So liminal space, sorry if I'm using different words to say the same thing, but sometimes we need different approaches for the same thing, because sometimes defense mechanisms are protecting, quote unquote, protecting us from these things. So we need to enter in one way or another. So liminal space is basically like inducing a type of inner crisis, which again is not a very word. An inner crisis that we help us to make a necessary transition in life. So liminal space will be always felt like a displacement. But a displacement in the hope of a new point of view. Again, displacement doesn't mean you end up nowhere. You are just being moved to another perspective. But the moving till you reach the new point of view feels uncomfortable for sure. Because we are being pulled out of our private absolute center, our comfort zone from which we like to think and see and judge everything and everyone. So we need crisis for that to happen. Again, the word crisis is not a bad word. If you study the etymology of crisis, and I've been doing that these days, because I'm in crisis, but again, it's not a bad word. Crisis means this is decisive point, like a breakthrough, basically. So that's not something bad. Again, it may feel bewildering, uncomfortable, but it's not something bad that shouldn't be happening, as we tend to interpret this type of notions. That shows how much ingrained in our culture, in our consciousness, are all these ideas. If I say dark, crisis, all this is like, no, thank you. Well, actually, all of them are totally necessary. So we need to even recalibrate our understanding of the language. We not only Sanskrit, what to speak of Sanskrit, our own language, whatever language we may speak. So crisis is basically that. It's a liminal space, however you may like to put it. You put the word you like, but the essence is the same. You're being moved to a new perspective, moved out of your private absolute center. And it's, of course, a situation that is demanding a decision from us, individual responsibility. And generally, we are terrified about that. We don't like to take responsibility. We just like to have someone else thinking for us, feeling for us, telling us what to do, how to think, what to buy, what to eat, how to comb my hair, how to dress. Ah, such a relief. But actually, we are realizing, especially in spiritual life, life is about growth and responsibility. And these liminal spaces, these threshold chapters, are crucial for us not to become like complacent, basically. Because if you don't find a liminal space in your life, you start to idolize, if you will, normalcy. And you basically become mediocre and superficial. You start to embrace a form of statu quo in which there is no invitation whatsoever to inhabit darkness. So, and you don't have any struggles, basically. You are not challenged. You are not out of the comfort zone. And you don't grow. You don't become an interesting, nuanced person. You can see that. I mean, people who have had no inner struggles in their life or who are just running from them constantly, they will be invariably both superficial and uninteresting, basically. Because there is not too much depth to their experience, basically. And we don't want that, especially in spiritual life. We want to be whole, deep human beings. So that's another way to put it, liminal space. And here I am walking my liminal space, my dark night of the soul, my crisis, whatever word you may like to put it. One of my many dark nights of the soul, for sure. I hope there will be many more, because again, we need so much of this, so many. And I'm not saying that in a masochist spirit, no, but just acknowledging how much displacement from normalcy is required for us to really grasp the bigger picture. And yeah, trying to say, again, as we say before, trying to say yes, to begin with a yes to whatever necessary suffering. There is unnecessary suffering, but there is necessary suffering also, which is inviting me to what I always like to speak about, integration of complexity. So much complexity that needs to be synthesized, needs to be integrated into a greater, bigger equation. And I like to speak about a lot, so now I have to really walk my talk. It's not the easiest walk and the easiest talk, but it has a price, but no problem. We have to do something with what's coming to us. And even if it's painful, and again, I try to say in this, remaining hopefully as empathic as I can with anyone's experience and also with mine, pain will be there. And again, pain hasn't, we should learn to suffer, as they say, not avoiding. So we should transform our pain. We should transmute our pain. If we don't transmute our pain, surely you will transmit that to others. You will transmit your unprocessed pain to others around you, and even to the next generation. I mean, you can pay attention to to that in the world and in the life of many. You know? The pain that was not properly dealt with and accepted and transformed is passed to the kids, is passed to the grandkids, and so on. And so we don't need to swallow that. We need to throw it. We don't need to repress that, and also we don't need to throw it outside of ourselves and create some false enemies outside of ourselves. No, we need to take full responsibility and deal with that properly. And again, remaining in a positive stance. It's, of course, it's easier, as you may imagine, it's easier, much easier, to be against something than to be for something. It's generally the negative tendency of the mind. It's easier to see defects than to see virtues, or to say yes first and not to say no to begin with. So it's easier to be against than to be for. But I will say that, especially in situations where so many things seems to be against, actually that's the best possible opportunity to ourselves to be for something which is way bigger than the against. No? Because if not, we become addicted to negativity, basically. And that's strange, but it works like that. You know, as we were speaking also these days, there's something very, some strange sweetness that comes about negativity or accusatory feelings. No, like a way that for you to achieve moral superiority. Like, I'm feeling right because the other one is wrong. Or I think it's wrong. Probably it's not even wrong, but I think I need the other one to be wrong, so I'm right. But even if the other is totally wrong, it doesn't mean that I'm right only because the other one is wrong. That's an important point. If you are not doing anything yourself to be right, it's not enough to have someone doing something wrong for you to be right. Do you follow? So in situations, challenging situations in your life, especially if you feel that some other person is doing wrong, it doesn't mean that you are right just because the other one is doing wrong. So it's very delicate, and it's a great temptation to fall into that. And there's always someone doing something wrong around you. Bhagavatam say, Kalir dosha nide rajan. In Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, which means there's always someone doing it wrong, probably beginning from ourselves. But probably, generally, we won't see that, and we see how everyone else is doing it wrong. And probably, indirectly, unconsciously, that's an excuse to feel moral superiority. I'm right because he or she is wrong. But that's not correct. And personally, I know that may be a great excuse for me, a great temptation. But I don't want to go into that direction, victimize myself or point to some whatever. Bad person outside or whatever, no? And I'm correct because the other person is wrong, or I think is wrong. That's not the game we are invited to play, ever. So I think it's way better to embrace the truth of ourselves. If the other person is wrong or not, or totally wrong, that's their journey, if you will. But it doesn't make us right. It doesn't make us superior. We have to do our part. We have to take responsibility for ourselves. I cannot depend on the other person doing it right or wrong for me to be right or wrong. I have to embrace truth myself without creating any, I don't know, us and them structures or pointing he's wrong and them right. I have to accept the consequences of embracing the truth myself. So that's what I'm trying to choose to do. On a daily basis. Again, I'm not saying it's easy, but I think that's the type of freedom I'm for. I feel it's necessary, the freedom to live in the truth, basically, despite all circumstances. Circumstances, in one sense, are secondary. The main consideration is I want to live in the truth. That's it. The main instruction, in one sense, how the whole Bhagavatam begins, Satyam Param Dimahi. Let's meditate on the absolute truth. So that's not a simple line. We will need another lecture for that. But it's not just, okay, think about Krishna. Imagine Krishna, think about Krishna. That's there you are following that line. No, it has so many implications. This Satyam Param Dimahi, meditate on Supreme Truth, means Supreme Truth includes all other forms of truth, And meditate on that means live your life according to that meditation. If not, what's that meditation? And do that despite all circumstances. Whatever may come, is coming for you to embrace that truth in a tighter embrace, if you will. No? And of course, to do that has its price, as you may imagine. To choose to embrace truth in all circumstances will have some price to pay. All of us have a price to pay at every decision we are taking. And we should be willing to do so, aware of that and taking responsibility. So anyhow, here I am trying to ascertain what's the price to pay and how much is the price, what's the currency to pay it, and pray for the necessary mercy to at least try to start paying it somehow, try to properly honor the truth that wants to come to me, and of course remain open to acknowledge whatever mistakes one may have done or will do in the context of that, and being willing always to apologize for that if that's the case. No, I mean, I don't want to lose that sensitivity as well, but at the same time we know that cannot just be forced in a superficial way. So trying to navigate that in the most possible sustainable human way. So that's where I am now. That there are no bigger plans than that, but I think this is quite a big plan in itself to try to go through all this. After these last days, it was fun because many devotees were also, apart from this main concern, okay, Maharaj, well, how you will move forward, what will happen next. Many were also with good intention, but it was funny. I received so many, like, so many, like, proposals. Like, Maharaj, come to Radhakunda, accept Babaji. I can get some signatures and you can join ISKCON, or even some devotees from the Ritvik section were writing to me, you know, Srila Prabhupada is calling you now. Finally, I accept him as your guru. And again, I'm not joking about them. I'm just saying that I'm not thinking about it. It's like if you, I don't know, someone gets divorced and the next day someone say, I have a new boyfriend for you or something. No? So at the present moment, I'm not rushing into how to move forward, no, if you will, but how to go through whatever is already here in the present. No? So I think, as I say in the beginning, and with this I'm already concluding, getting to 1 hour, 8 minutes. So I think the most important thing, as I say, you know, is to actually believe, and to actually believe means to actually experience that there is such a thing as a path forward. Just not only say move forward, but to have deep conviction that that's there. That's not so easy. And it is there, but that of course we need to develop the vision, the faith, the experience of that. So, and in one sense, I don't care which will be the path forward. I'm not attached to whatever form will take the next chapter, but I care that whatever form it takes, it's the real choice, and it's whatever has to happen according to Krishna's wish. And to have this faith, there is a path forward, and the rest will follow accordingly, for sure. Because if we try to determine the path forward in a rushing way, in an impatient mood, if you will, we may end up taking the wrong decisions. So I prefer to wait, to pray, to observe, and to develop my trust and about the unconditional, again, meaning of life and purpose of life and mercy of Hari, Vaishnavas, in whatever way that will come to us. And the rest will follow accordingly, I'm totally sure. So that's how I'm choosing to express my acceptance in the present moment, my yes, my sharanagati, my faith in this particular stage of life. So anyhow, some words I want to share with you today. So I'm grateful for your presence and your friendship, and somehow we'll keep in touch in one form or another. Probably next week we may have another meeting. I'll let you know. So thank you so much. And since I've done it quite a while already, I thought I will speak for 40 minutes, but already I'm speaking like 70 minutes. So I will conclude here. And if we have questions or something, we can continue speaking privately, or we can eventually organize some other meeting and organize that. But I hope that some of these words also, that I feel are not only words, hopefully, but are helping in my journey, and I wish the same in yours, in whatever. Again, beyond one particular circumstance. Here we are speaking about life as a journey, with so many journeys inside the journey, so many chapters inside the book, so many cantos, volumes of that one same book. So happy to be sharing this particular section with all of you. So hope to see you very soon. Gaur Hari Bol.